Good morning. It's 9 minutes after 6 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine this week. Many of us spend a good deal of our lives at work. In fact, some of us spend more time at work than we do anywhere else. And chances are that through the course of our careers, in the course of your career, you've run into a boss who is a bully, and it's never pleasant. Our guest this hour has written a book titled Bullying Bosses, A Survivor's Guide. In it, Robert Mueller takes a look at the types of bullies. He defines them, talks about why some bosses turn into bullies. We also talk about what you can do about it. He goes past just identifying who is a bully and what you, as the target of a bully in the workplace, can do. We'll want to find out what you think about this topic. Have you bullied or been bullied in the workplace? How were you able to deal with it? Or, if you're a bully, how did you find yourself in that position? We hear a lot these days about bullying among kids in schools. Don't bullies ever grow up? If you'd like to join in the discussion, give us a call. The toll-free number is 800-642-1234. Or if you're calling from the Madison area, it's 263-1890. You can also join us by email. That address is talk@wpr.org. Robert Mueller, good morning and welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good morning, sir.
Well, it's good to have you along. Good way to start out the week, I think. And I want to start out with the introduction to your book, because you start out, it's a very direct book, I have to say. And you say right off the top, this is not a scholarly treatise. And you talk about how many of the books that, and you know, there's a lot of self-help books out there about this sort of topic, are not particularly direct and sort of tiptoe around things. And I want to talk with you a bit about how you arrived at this particular philosophy, how you came to the place where you are in terms of dealing with bullies and abusive situations in the workplace.
Well, for a number of years, I was, a union attorney. I would represent large volumes of employees. And I noticed that there was a particular kind of reoccurring situation. I couldn't, had no idea what it was, but it had a commonality to it, a very bad taste, to quote an earlier person on your show. I investigated it for, I guess it's been 25 years I've been looking at it. And during the course of it, I noticed that the people who were being accused of being bullies could either be just rough and tough bosses for whom sensitivity training or substance abuse problems could be helpful programs. And the others were absolutely incorrigible. They were cold, distant. They couldn't connect with their employees. They couldn't connect with anybody. And it seemed that they were bullying as a substitute. The difficult thing in trying to figure out who they were and what they were about is they're very good at charming up the management at the same time. So as they charmed up and they bullied down, they weren't connecting with anybody.
Let's talk about, because you touch on a point there that I want to start by defining bullying, because there's abuse, there's bullying, and as you say, there are perhaps some bosses who just have some other issues that you can deal with. How do you define a bully, and how is it different from some of the other behaviors you might see in a supervisor in the workplace?
Well, abuse is a very different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Abuse is a behavior. You can be abusive, for example. It can be verbally abusive, physically abusive. The bully is actually a political definition, somebody taking advantage of a power differential in the schoolyard, that would be perhaps body weight. That's, by the way, the only commonality between schoolyard bullies and workplace. In the workplace, the differential comes by virtue of standing in the hierarchy. You have authority over somebody because management gave you authority. You're taking advantage of that authority in a power struggle in which you have a superior position. It's fundamentally not fair. Unfortunately, people who are in the negative situation with targets get very much caught up in the unfairness of it. They speak a lot about justice and the need for, and injustice, and fail to look at the situation objectively and just plain take care of themselves no matter how awful it might be.
In the book, and you just used the phrase, the word targets, that's how you define people who are the subject of bullying.
That's right. The common terminology in our field is to call them targets. They have also been called victims, but it's more appropriate in the workplace to call them targets because it is a political situation, and the employees who are walking around on the wrong end of this thing feel very much like there's a target on their chest.
Yeah, and I wanted to follow up on that because I was going to, they may not literally have a target on their back somewhere, but at some point the bully picks them out as the target. So the bully sees that target. What does the bully see?
Principally, they see somebody who's threatening to them, being unable to connect. They tend not to be very good in their jobs. They're not very good being salespeople. They're not very good in production. They just don't quite make the stuff. But what they can do is they can tear other people down with nonsense. It's much easier to tear somebody down than build oneself back up with substance. So if they see someone in the workplace and they say, this person's particularly productive, particularly proficient, maybe they have some leadership potential, this is the person who offends me and I'm going to squash him or her.
We're talking about bullying bosses this hour with our guest, Robert Mueller, a former attorney, also a workplace organizer and consultant. He is an advisor to distressed and harassed employees and the author of the book we're talking about during the hour. It's titled Bullying Bosses, A Survivor's Guide, How to Transcend the Illusion of the Interpersonal. We'd like you to join in the discussion as well. Here's the toll-free number. It's 800-642-1234. If you're calling from Madison, it is 263-1890. 263-1890. And don't forget, you can also join us by email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 17 minutes after 6 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell. Coming up after 9 on Kathleen Dunn, from President Bush calling for a global goal for greenhouse gas emissions to the first formal meeting between the U.S. and Iran in 27 years, Kathleen and her guest will discuss last week's top political headlines. That's coming up later on this morning here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about bullying bosses with Robert Mueller, a former attorney and workplace organizer and consultant. He is the author of the new book, Bullying Bosses, A Survivor's Guide, How to Transcend the Illusion of the Interpersonal. Robert Mueller, before the break, we were getting into some definitions, and I want to kind of continue on with that and start talking a little bit about what people should do if they feel as though they're being bullied. And in your book, I have to say that some of the advice doesn't sound logical at first. So I want to start with some of that. First of all, you say human resources is not a place to go.
Yeah, human resources has a job, and their job is to protect management against lawsuits, basically. Discrimination lawsuits, of course, is a very big one. Now, there's workers' comp claims. They're not there to be neutral. They're not judges. They're not arbitrators. They have to protect management. They will listen to your story, but they won't necessarily side with you. Unfortunately, also, they hear sad stories all the time. They hear grievances, you know, on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
They close their ears. They don't have much sensitivity to things when they haven't heard anything different out of this individual. And the things can be different with people listening to your show is that they're going to come in with documentation. Most people go in whining. When you go in with documentation, time, date, place for each of the events, then they start to pay attention. I suggest that people put these pieces of information on 3x5 cards, just the succinct details, time, place, date, person's quotes, description of particular behavior, and that's it. No journal articles, nothing long and long-winded. And when you go in with that data, what they see is not a bad day or a personal dispute, but what they see is a pattern and practice of abuse over time, a campaign by one individual against another.
And you're kind of getting at it when you're talking about the 3x5 cards, but you don't see a lot of room for emotion in this whole process. I mean, it's a very emotional process, but you kind of argue that you've got to take that out of this when you're trying to deal with it. And that has to be difficult for people to do.
It's extremely difficult to do. And nobody's really going to be, unfortunately, paying much attention to you if you are emotional, not in the workplace. Now, when you go home at night and you want to share with your significant other or whomever your trials and tribulations of the day, that's fine. Give a therapist, that's fine. But leave those out of the workplace. The workplace is a place for business. And if your feelings get hurt in the workplace, nobody gets terribly excited. What they're looking at is production. Can you provide production for the company? And at the same time, can you protect yourself?
800-642-1234 is the toll-free number that you can use if you'd like to join in the discussion, and we have an open line for you. In Madison, it is 263-1890. Join us by email as well at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Madison right now, and Ruth joins us. Hi, Ruth.
Yeah, good morning. I've been a union steward since 1978, and I really like that last piece of advice you gave, except that I usually will tell them to just get one of those little spiral notebooks that fits in their pocket and just document, because you're right, word against word is different than word against documentation. But this is the evaluation time of the year, the employee evaluation time, and I see a lot of times where people are hearing for the first time of some deficiency in their performance, and a lot of times with the bully, it's something unreasonable and unrelated to the actual work, and, you know, they'll come to me with like a 3-page screed that they've written that they want to put in their personnel file to counter, you know, in response to their bad evaluation, and I'll tell them, you know, this is going to make you look like you can't take criticism, so you just need to say like 3 short sentences. Number one, you know, this is the first that I have ever heard of this deficiency. 2, you know, if I had been told about it sooner, I would have taken steps to correct the problem. And 3, now that I have been informed, I will take steps to correct the problem. You know, that kind of thing. That's all it has to say. And that's what I see with workplace bullies. And I've been, as a lead worker, I had to actually, my supervisor would give me evaluations or the raw material for them, and it would just be like, I felt like, pull this one out of the crapper now, you know, because I like to start with what they're doing right and then tell them how they can improve.
Mm-hmm. Ruth, have you seen any change in workplace bullying over the years that you've been employed?
You know, it was so much worse back in the before the 1980s, before the sexual harassment laws came in. Bullying had a whole different face. It does seem to be getting meaner in the workplace in the last 5 years, or at least, you know, even since Bush has been in office. They're unstoppable.
Ruth, thanks for the call. Robert Mueller, what do you think about her observations?
Well, I think she's exactly right. When the sexual discrimination, racial discrimination legislation was passed, it put management back on their ears a little bit. They had to be careful. They didn't know what was going on. They were confused. Since then, they've regrouped. They have a lot more confidence about themselves. Discrimination lawsuits don't have as much punch as they used to. Taking that confidence and matching it together against more conservative trends in America generally, particularly in the workplace, abuse has gone up. And unfortunately, employees are suffering the consequences. So are employers, by the way. The bullies are not helping the employer. They're on their own mission. They're not pursuing production or service. What they're doing is pursuing the mission of conquest over individual human beings. They're off point. They're not team players.
And it's worth pointing out that employers are different from supervisors, and people often confuse those two things.
Yeah, an employer is usually an abstract entity, a company or a department of government or whatever. It's a institutional embodiment of their stockholders, or the public, perhaps. The management is the leadership of the team. They are effectively the people you work for. They have management teams, for example, that you may be ultimately responsible to. You may not know who they are, but they're up there looking down at you. And then below that is this individual supervisors who have line authority over rank and file employees.
And the question I have is, you know, above the supervisors, the bullying bosses, there has to be some oversight over those people. And you talked earlier about charming up, that these the bullies are often very good at charming up. How can that be? I mean, is that level of management just often so far out of touch that they don't see it, or they don't want to look very deeply, they don't have the time for it, or what?
Oh, a number of reasons come into play here. The biggest one, I think, is they don't have the time, as you just said. They don't have the interest. They have big enough problems of their own. They may be having somebody who's giving them a hard time from on high above them. They have lots of problems. Unless you can bring data to the table, they're not going to see your problems as significant, and they're certainly not going to want to take them on themselves. The supervisors, well, as long as their numbers are good for production or service, that tends to be enough for them. They don't look into the personnel relationships. The excuse they often give is they don't want to undermine the authority of the supervisor. The reality is they're not taking responsibility for their job to supervise the supervisor.
Yeah, and the other element of, I think it was one that Ruth touched upon, was, the annual performance evaluation. And I think for a lot of people, as employees, that is often the one time in a year that they receive any feedback at all.
Exactly. You know, I differentiate a number of categories of bullies, but the two broad categories are subtle versus abusive. Now, abusive would tend to be yelling and screaming, the sort of thing you would see in a movie, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But the far more prevalent is the subtle, and this comes in through things like the performance reports. You can terrorize somebody with a performance report with sometimes greater damage than you can by yelling at them. It undermines your confidence, undermines your standing in the community, undermines your sense of worth and your ability to support your family.
And it's also more difficult, I think, in the subtle case to get that dialed in on a 3x5 card.
That is absolutely the case. Significant others can be very helpful here. They don't understand what's going on in the workplace. If you go home every night with a horror story, it just sounds like a melodrama one night after the other. But if you sit down with the 3x5 cards, with the succinct details, and you see how the cards, I used to use those little three-ring notebooks as well, but now I use the cards because you can maneuver them around on a table, and you can see where the patterns are, and together with your significant other, you can find those patterns and then take advantage of them.
Let me ask you this. We've got to take a break in about 2 minutes, so we don't have a lot of time. But if someone in a workplace feels as though they are a target, what can they do to sort of, I don't know if you can prevent being a target at all, but what can you do to ready yourself for that sort of approach from your supervisor?
Well, documentation is number one. Number two is to look around to your coworkers and see how they are withstanding workplace problems and perhaps even personal problems, and see how you can help them. If they have a need of some sort, help them with their need rather than try and burden them with your own. The bully focuses on isolating you, the target, from your colleagues, making you the lone wolf and therefore easy to take down. If you're, on the other hand, out there actually giving people a value, maybe it might be just something as simple as hooking them up with a romantic interest or a good workers' comp attorney, something that they need, then you'll have a friend down the line.
We're talking with Robert Mueller this hour. He is a former attorney and a workplace organizer and consultant and an advisor to distressed and harassed employees. He is the author of a new book titled Bullying Bosses, A Survivor's Guide, How to Transcend the Illusion of the Interpersonal. And we're talking with him about different types of bullies, who bullies are, and who the targets are. What is your workplace like, and how can you survive it if you've got a bully who is in-house? If you'd like to join in the discussion, give us a call. We've got a toll-free number for you and some open lines. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. That is 800-642-1234. If you're calling from Madison, it is 263-1890. You can also join us by email at talk@WPR.org. If you've had a boss who is a bully, we would like to hear about it. So give us a call and join in the discussion. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine this week. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine today. This hour, we're talking about the book Bullying Bosses, A Survivor's Guide, How to Transcend the Illusion of the Interpersonal, with our guest, Robert Mueller, who wrote the book and also works extensively in the field. We've got a lot of calls all of a sudden, so let's go right to them. Mary joins us, and Mary is in Madison. Good morning.
Good morning. I was just wondering, what does one do if the grievance has not been heard, it has just been dismissed? It's just left hanging out there, I guess.
Okay, that's a good question. I imagine a lot of people take that first step and then sort of sit back to wait and see what happens. Robert Mueller, what's your advice?
It depends on the circumstances. If it's hanging in front of a bully boss, it's not going to go anywhere. So you're going to have to get your data together and take it up another notch. If, on the other hand, it's hanging in front of somebody who is attuned to the job and just hasn't, to your concerns, I mean, just hasn't quite gotten into them, your concerns, well, you want to talk to them and try and get them focused on you. Most supervisors are, of course, earnest, and they care about their jobs, and they care about their employees, and you ought to give them a chance. The bullies do not.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Mary, good luck. We appreciate the call. Gloria joins us, and she is in Platteville this morning. Hi, Gloria. And Gloria did join us. Yep, Gloria joined us, and then she decided to go somewhere else, I guess. Let's go to Barron, and Joanne is with us in Barron. And good morning, Joanne.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, I don't know what that is.
I don't know what that is either, but you can still hear me, right?
Yeah, I can still hear you.
Okay. Well, okay.
There we go.
My question really concerns something I think is very odd. My supervisor went back to hire me. We were friends before I was hired. And so I was hired. And within 6 months after I was hired, my friend turned into kind of an enemy. And he really was a bully. And his way of handling a situation was to ambush me. And this went on for 6 years, and also the evaluations in June were exactly as your guest described. There were issues that I was totally unaware of, and I kept asking myself, what is supervision all about? Do you just wait and store up everything so that you can attack your worker? So I guess and I didn't do very well. I mean, 6 years. Let me tell you the net result of what happened very quickly.
Okay.
And this is a municipal job. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In the area of counseling. A lot of the things that I wanted to accomplish, that I hoped to accomplish, I gave up. My spirit really was crushed, and this is not a pity potty thing at all, but I understand now how mediocrity develops, because mediocrity sometimes is a result of survival, just sheer survival to hold on to your job. And I'll take your response off the air, okay?
All right.
Off the phone.
Sure.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Joanne, lots to think about there. And Robert Mueller, I'm not sure where to start, but I think the idea of friendship with a person who becomes your boss is probably a good place to begin.
This is a reoccurring theme. The best friend you think in your workplace is your boss, and you're getting along great. You may be the only person getting along with this individual, and all of a sudden he or she turns on you, and it makes no sense. It sends your head spinning. It comes up so often that I wonder if I ever had a boss that was a best friend again, if I wouldn't take that as a warning sign from the top. The mediocrity question is really important.
Mm-hmm.
The starting point here, as I said before, is the bullies tend not to be entirely competent. So they squash the employees below them, thus protecting their own mediocrity. In the squashing, as this woman suggested, they create mediocrity in their employees or subordinates. This is where management's missing the boat. This is where management is losing production and service, because they're supporting a supervisor who is failing to energize and lead workers, and is instead squashing.
And you actually talk about that in your book. You've got the quantifiable business costs of bullying. And it's interesting, because a lot of supervisors probably think, well, if we just sort of look the other way for the moment, and everything will continue and the production will continue and so on. And you argue exactly the opposite, that if you let this sort of behavior continue, that it's bad for business.
It's very bad for business. There's been a number of studies on this, and every study agrees. The occupational psychologists, they're sort of the scientists in the business schools, this is the sort of thing they quantify, and these are the results they keep coming up with. The illusion exists among management that at least this supervisor is trying to do something. There's a misconception, I suppose, maybe not, that supervisors don't do anything. They just sort of hang out and look rather worthless. Well, the bully shows up, and they're out there aggressively doing whatever they do aggressively. Supervisors and managers like that. When in fact, if it's a bully, what they're doing is removing production hours and service hours.
I want to go back to something else Joanne was talking about, that whole issue of friendship in the workplace. And in your book, you talk about interpersonal relationships and how they should be handled within the workplace. And, you know, for a lot of people who spend a lot of time at work, you know, they make friends, bosses become colleagues, they go out in their backyard and grill out with the family and so on and so on. You're not for that. You like things to be on a much more sort of emotionally detached scale.
I think the general business concept, if you look through you know, business magazines and the rest of books, is that you should be personable.
Yeah.
But not necessarily personal. The workplace is not family. Sometimes it has that illusion to it, but if you'll notice, if somebody changes their role or their position even a little bit, the relationships change with them. With a family, no matter what happens, the sibling who you can't get along with, you still won't get along with them, and the one you can. Jobs up, down, whatever. In a job situation, if one person is made a supervisor over another, the relationship changes overnight.
800-642-1234 is the toll-free number in Madison. It is 263-1890. Let's go to Land O'Lakes now, and Marcus joins us. Hi, Marcus.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm enjoying the conversation.
Great.
My question to your guest is that the workplace, I think, has changed a lot in the last 10 to 15 years, where there are a lot of subcontractors in the workplace now. And what I mean by that, whether it's a real estate office or a hair salon, from a financial and or technical point of view, these are not employees. These are subcontractors who are self-employed. Having said that, it operates very much the same as a normal workplace, where you do have a boss and you have subordinates. And in these environments, there is a lot of bullying going on. And my question to your guest is, in that subcontractor environment, how does one protect himself or herself from bullying when it doesn't have to mean that you would leave one real estate office and have to move or leave another workplace and actually physically go somewhere else to get away from it? I'll take the comments off the air.
All right, Marcus, a good question. I mean, there are a lot more contractors today, I think, than there were 10 or 20 years ago, and they're part of the workplace too.
Oh, there's a tremendous trend in that direction. The starting point there is not all people who are identified as contract employees actually are under the law. Sometimes it's a characterization in order to avoid paying unemployment insurance, workers' comp, et cetera. So you have to know what exactly your job is and how whether or not it actually is an independent contractor job or perhaps an employee one. Don't take it on face value. When it comes to the subcontractors, they can often be more ruthless than any of the others. They feel a protection because they have a little isolation from the employment structure. At the same time, in some situations, contract management may be more sympathetic because they have a business reputation to protect if they're going to protect their contract. So it's kind of a mixed bag. It depends on the situation.
And for the person who is the contracted employee, I guess, do they just use the same methodology in trying to document, to take care of a complaint, or do they just pick up their business and go elsewhere?
In any of these situations, it's always a good idea to do what I call touch the market. Go out and look for a job, not necessarily to take one. You may not want to do that right now, but look for the job anyway. Because when you have one out there in the offing, if you know your exact placement in the marketplace of jobs, your confidence in the workplace goes up dramatically. You will hop back in your step, much less the victim.
All right. Robert Mueller is our guest, the author of Bullying Bosses, A Survivor's Guide, How to Transcend the Illusion of the Interpersonal. We're going to take a break and then continue our discussion in just a moment. We hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234. In Madison, it is 263-1890. I'm Gene Purcell here for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. It's 12 minutes before 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 7, stay tuned for the State Capitol Report. We'll take a look at a proposed statewide smoking ban, an oil tax, and look forward to this week when the Joint Finance Committee continues its work on the state budget. This hour, we're talking about bullying bosses, a survivor's guide with our guest, Robert Mueller. He wrote it, and in addition to that, he is also a workplace organizer and consultant. Let's go right back to the phones right now, and Gloria is with us again from Platteville. Good morning, Gloria.
Hi, I'm on my cell phone. Can you hear me?
Oh, we sure can.
Oh, good. I was there before, but I don't know if something happened there. I want to talk to you about a period of time where had a boss or supervisor. And what he would do is he would come into his office and he'd say, shut the door. And as soon as you'd shut the door, then he would start yelling at you. Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, we're still here.
Okay, good. Okay, so now I noticed this trend with him, with the different employees that he had. And when I came in, one day I says, I refuse to shut the door. I said, I'm not gonna shut the door and then have you yell at me. And so I'm like, what is his response and how would you handle something of this magnitude where the supervisor or boss, as soon as you would shut the door, would just start yelling at you. And actually he was actually irrational is what he was.
Gloria, another good question. Robert Mueller, how do you handle that? They call you into the office, they shut the door, and they just go right into yelling mode.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. In fact, I would expect that everybody in the office sees that happening. So there is a public aspect to it. They may not hear it, but they see that door being shut, and they know awful things are happening behind it. That's what the bully wants. The bully wants that audience. They may not want everybody to see the details, but they want to know that the person's being grilled over. Her refusal to shut the door is great. If you can get away with it, it's fantastic, and I admire her for her guts.
Now, if she can't get away with it, though, then what?
I recommend trying to distract them, especially if they're getting irrational. They tend to focus on process issues, how you did something, how you didn't do something, because those are things they control. They love control. I suggest that you shift the discussion to results, what needs to be done, and if possible, identify employer goals. Get the discussion over into goals, what we have to accomplish. I often suggest that people try to wrap themselves in the flag, so to speak. They're defending their employer's mission, and they're asking their supervisor to join them. So you're taking a personal confrontation, and you're translating it into pursuit of company goals.
And at the same time, we'd like to take a few more phone calls here, but I wanted to kind of shift gears a bit and talk about your website. There is a website that goes, I don't know if it goes along with the book or if you had this going on before. It's called bullyingbosses.com. And on it, you've got one form that I found sort of interesting, the incident report form that people can use. They can print it out and do whatever they want to with it. But it's sort of an organized way of documenting. It's like that 3x5 card made even a little easier for you. Talk a little bit about that and sort of the discipline it takes for someone to follow through on something like this, to report, you know, to fill out the report, to be sort of emotionally detached, and to come up with something that'll help make a difference for them.
They're exactly right. That is the substitute for the 3x5 cards. It does make it easier. It makes certain that you focus on exactly the details that you need. Many people claim that that's my greatest contribution. I've modeled it on other kinds of reports. It seems to work in this situation. It can be printed. It can be filled out online, but I have to caution, don't use the employer's computer while you're doing any of this. Computers may seem like yours at work, but they're in the employer's, and they can look into them as much as they please. The discipline of focusing on just the details may seem difficult at first, but when you start doing it, you find that it empowers you. You're redefining, recasting a negative event in your own terms. All of a sudden, you're in charge of your memory. All of a sudden, you're in charge of your feelings. and that makes all the difference in the world in a combat situation.
And in your book, you use the word combat situation there, the phrase. You liken this very much to a fight.
It is a fight. It's a political fight. In an election, you have winners and you have losers. In war, you have winners and you have losers. All of this is politics. And with the bullying, it's workplace politics gone bad and over the top.
We have an email from Josh in Michigan who wants to know about what you can do when your boss is a surgeon and you can't leave the work environment. There's a good question. Your boss is a surgeon. You've got a job that presumably is a good job, and maybe you can't leave the town. Maybe you've got family. But for whatever reason, you simply cannot leave. And the surgeon in a hospital is about as high as it gets. What do you do?
That is about the toughest situation there can be. Doctors get away with murder, the ones who have this tendency to bully. Frequently, however, in these medical situations, you also have a union. And as your shop steward in the first call indicated, the union can be very helpful in guiding you through this process. One-on-one against a surgeon, you're not going to do very well.
And that's, I think, a lot of people's experience. As we get ready to wrap the hour up here, I want to kind of ask, and this is kind of an abstract question, I guess, but if there's somebody out there listening right now who might not know whether they're being bullied or not, how do they know if they are the target? I mean, a lot of people right away know, but there could be some people who just think they've got a boss who's slightly crazy. Maybe they're not, you know, maybe they think they're not doing a good job and they're being picked on, for reasons of performance. But how do you know when you're being actually being bullied as opposed to being supervised?
That's a tough one. Just about anybody who's being dealt with negatively feels like they're being harassed.
Mm-hmm.
A negative performance report, you're being harassed. Are you really being harassed, or are you getting a business objective appraisal? The difference between the two for the individual is almost impossible to tell. Your own perspective on yourself is obviously skewed in your own favor. Talk to your coworkers. See what they see. Have them evaluate you to you. Pick up their advice. The third-party opinion, I think, in the workplace probably more than anywhere, is critical.
And it helps, as you mentioned before, that isolationist factor that bullies often do. If you kind of reach out to colleagues in the workplace, you are effectively working against that.
That's the point. Don't be the victim running around crying. People are not going to find that attractive. They're going to run away to get away from your problems. It's easier to catch a fly with honey than vinegar, so they say, and that's definitely true in the workplace. Have an upbeat attitude, have a strong professional presence, look to the production and service issues, focus on the employer's goals, and stay connected as best you can to your colleagues. If it's a real bully, the bully can't connect with anybody.
How has your book been received? It seemed, because it is a rather direct book. I mean, it doesn't pussyfoot around. On either, on people who are being bullied or on bullies themselves. And are people ready for that? I mean, it seems as though a lot of the self-help books are much more supportive and, sort of, I don't know if touchy-feely is the right term, but, they just seem a lot more sensitive. And yours is just like right there in your face. You know, this is what you have to do. This person's doing a bad thing, and you've got to sort of take charge of your own destiny.
That's exactly right. This is a political situation. It's not a therapy situation. It's not a family situation. You have to deal with it objectively. There's no room for monkeying around. The way this book seems to be being used more than I expected, and I'm glad, is more of a manual. I get this reoccurring comment in emails that people read it by sections for what they need at that time, and then they keep rereading the same sections over and over and over again. It's dense. The book is dense. You're not necessarily going to get it on a first blush. You may not even want to read the whole thing as a narrative. Just pick out the sections that are important to you. That's the way people are picking it up.
Let's go. We've got time for one more call, so let's join Bernard in Madison. Hi, Bernard.
Hello. I have a problem here where we have a department bully here at the university, and the problem is that I would like to file charges, and bring it up to the department, it would be much more effective if we discussed some of the more serious bullying that has happened with reference to other members of the department, some of whom have already left. One person in particular, the latest target, left the department, but was so traumatized, she's still around, but she's reluctant to talk about it. The question is then, what do you do when you have a target who doesn't want to talk about it?
Good question, and unfortunately, Robert Mueller, we've only got about 30 seconds for your answer. What if the bully victim doesn't want to talk?
They generally don't. They're scarred for life. But if you talk to somebody on a personal level over time, here's your being personal part. If you're talking to someone on a personal level over time, they will talk to you. It just takes a very long time and a lot of patience.
All right. There's your answer, Bernard. A long time and a lot of patience. So keep at it. Robert Mueller, thanks for joining us this morning. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, sir.
Robert Mueller, the author of Bullying Bosses, A Survivor's Guide, How to Transcend the Illusion of the Interpersonal. And we've been talking about that for the past hour. If you'd like a copy of the program, you can call the radio store. You can also listen to these programs online at our archives at WPR.org. We had production help, on-air production help this morning from Christina Taylor, so thanks for that. And I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine this morning here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.